Hello, hello. Welcome to the show. I'm Joy Dooling, and you are listening to the Joy of Membership podcast. This podcast is for membership leaders. So we talk about strategies for attracting, engaging, and retaining members. But that's not entirely the focus of the show, because let's be honest here, there is no shortage of advice out there on best practices in membership. What we need to talk about is how to actually make those things possible in the real world, how to be absolutely sure that growth practices are going to stick, how to make those things easier, more consistent, and even automatic in some cases. Sound good? Then stick around because we're about to jump into it. Hey there, Joy Dooling here, host of the Joy of Membership podcast. Thanks for tuning in for today's episode. We talk a lot in this show about providing members with value. If you've listened to many episodes, you've probably noticed that being truly helpful for members comes in many different shapes and sizes. And I hope that you find the stories that you've heard to be inspirational and full of little idea nuggets that you can apply to your own organization. Still, you may find yourself returning to questions like, how can my organization create more value? Are there parts of the member experience where we aren't performing as well as we could? If those questions feel familiar, I'd like to invite you to download my free member experience scorecard. It's a quick one-page assessment that tells you exactly where your membership-based organization has areas of strength that you can build on and areas of gap where you're probably going to want to improve. The scorecard is free, and in less than 10 minutes, you'll gain some actionable insights. You can grab your copy right now at joyofmembership.com/scorecard. My guest for this week's episode is Heather Burright, founder and CEO of Skill Masters Market. While Heather now does consulting with organizations around instructional design and change management, she came into that work from a large membership-based nonprofit. In our conversation, we specifically focused on the shift that is happening right now, where more organizations are needing to conduct their training sessions in a virtual manner. Now, if you're like most organizations that are finding yourselves in this position, you're probably concerned about making sure that the continuing education or professional development opportunities that you are offering are still as effective as possible, even in a virtual format. Heather gave some great tips that I think you're going to find super helpful. Now, here's my conversation with Heather Burright. Hey, Heather, welcome to the podcast. I'm really glad you could be here with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Okay, so let's start by having you tell the listeners who you are and how you help.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Heather Burright. I'm the founder of Skill Masters Market, and I have about 15 years of experience in the learning and development space, and just started my own consulting business in May, and I focus primarily on learning and development with really specializing in the virtual classroom. And my last role, I said I have 15 years of learning and development experience. My last role was with a national nonprofit where I identified the competencies that people needed to be successful throughout their career. So at each sort of level within the organization, and then helped HR leaders hire, onboard, and develop their staff with those competencies in mind. So I really had an eye on what staff needed throughout the entire talent lifecycle. And I, as part of that, also did some training for them, including their very first virtual classroom trainings, and just fell in love with the delivery method, and have been doing this on my own since May. I think many organizations right now are faced with this new challenge of a remote workforce, and it makes it even harder to get good training in the hands of their people. But it's still just as important as it ever has been. And so it's an area that I feel like is just a really good specialty right now, where I can come in and I can really provide impact for organizations that need to still provide that training to their staff.
Oh, I would think what you do would be very much in demand right now. I'm imagining that there are many organizations who never thought that they would be doing anything except in-person training that now are recognizing that we will probably be doing virtual for a while.
Yeah, I think it'll be a while before people are comfortable coming back together in large groups in person. And so it doesn't mean the training needs have stopped, right? So this is an opportunity to continue to provide training to the people that need it most. And I know you focus a lot on membership associations, and it's just as important, right, for members as it is for, you know, full-time or part-time staff.
Well, and a lot of times the associations and trade groups are providing continuing education credit. So they want to make sure that whatever, you know, classroom experience they're providing is actually achieving the learning objectives that they want participants to have. So can you give us some thoughts or some tips on, you know, how you can make sure that, you know, virtual training is as valuable as it can be for the participants?
Yeah, absolutely. I have four tips that I'd like to share. And when I first share them, they probably won't sound very novel, but I'm going to talk in a little bit more detail about them, about how you really apply them in a virtual classroom setting. So if you're already doing training, these probably will not rock your boat. But the four tips are: start with a clear direction, create a learning experience that will allow your staff to practice the behaviors or the actions that you want them to take after the training is over, prepare for delivery, and then evaluate the training. So again, these are things that you're probably already doing for in-person training or in-person events. We're really just going to talk more specifically about how we adapt that and use that in the virtual classroom.
Makes perfect sense.
So I can start by diving a little deeper into start with clear direction. Again, you're probably already doing this as you're deciding, you know, what type of training to provide and what should be included in the training. But I like to focus really specifically on what people need to do. What is the behavior? What is the action? And I think this becomes even more important in a virtual classroom setting where people are on a computer and they might have easier access to email. It might be easier to pick up a phone, right? So many people are worried about the people in their training not paying attention or multitasking. And it becomes even more important to have a really clear direction that focuses in on the action, on the behavior that you really need people to take in order to have the best results. So if you're really hyper-focused, it's going to provide more value to the person that's sitting in that virtual seat. And so they'll be less likely to multitask and more likely to pay attention. And then the second step was around creating a learning experience that allows staff to practice whatever those behaviors or actions are. You know, knowledge doesn't equal behavior change. And a lot of times when we start to create training, we focus first on what we want them to know, right? What do I need to communicate? And because it doesn't equal behavior change, it's not really a super effective way to create in-person training, but it's even more highlighted in that virtual classroom space because, again, it's easy for them to multitask. But if we provide them with the opportunities to focus in on the doing and give them the chance to practice whatever it is they need to do, they're going to be more engaged. So again, there might be information that they need to know in order to do those things, and that's okay, but we want to focus as much as we can on the doing. When we give them the chance to practice, we give them the chance to be hands-on, even in a virtual space. And I can give a couple of examples of what that might look like as well.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, I was having a conversation earlier today with a client who has been delivering a virtual training. It's several weeks long, and he's about at the midpoint, and he was expressing a little bit of concern about, you know, whether participants were really getting it in a way that they would be able to implement after the program was done. And I had suggested to him that he do a midpoint check-in and just see, okay, how is this information hitting? Do you feel, you know, more prepared to move forward from here on, you know, what the outcome is of the program? But, you know, he had not considered doing that. Like, midpoint, this is perfect. Just ask if people are getting what they need and how prepared they feel to do the outcome at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll talk a little bit about it with the evaluate the training tip, but I think it becomes more important when this is a new delivery method to have both the formal and the informal feedback loops built into the process. You know, stopping to ask how it's going, especially when it's a longer training like that, is a great way to get informal feedback and be able to adapt what you're doing. Having a focus group with people who have participated in the virtual classroom training allows you to get feedback that you can then implement in the next iteration of that training. Having a focus group or interview with the trainers is a great way to get feedback that's more informal than, say, your level one or level two training evaluation. And it just gives you information and insight that you can use to continue to improve and enhance what you're offering.
Excellent.
Yeah. So when creating the learning experience and really focusing in on those actions and giving them a chance to practice, which I don't know what your client is providing as far as practice goes. But a lot of times I think people are unsure, unclear about what practice looks like in a virtual setting, which then leads to a lot of lecture, which makes it feel a little bit more like a webinar. And the webinars have their place, but it's more for transferring knowledge, right? Whereas a virtual classroom really gives you the opportunity to focus in on the practice. And so when you're in the virtual space, you can do a couple of different things. One, you can leverage independent work before or between sessions. So again, it sounds like your client has multiple sessions over a period of time. You can leverage that time for independent work so that they're coming to the virtual classroom ready to engage, ready to share, ready to get feedback and improve on whatever it is the behavior is. You can also leverage peer work and virtual breakout groups as a way to provide hands-on practice. So let's say you need your staff to listen to customer needs and document them in a new way. You may decide that they need to practice both the listening and the documentation in order to hit the goals that you need for your organization. So you could use scenarios and role play in really small breakout groups. There's just a couple, two or three people maybe in a group, so that they can be really hands-on together. You give them the chance to practice listening and perhaps use something like Google Slides, some sort of shared space where they can practice documenting those conversations. And now you're able to leverage peer feedback on the listening, peer and instructor feedback on the documentation to ensure that those conversations are happening the way they should and being documented the way they should. Now they have something, some really practical tips and feedback that they can take back and apply in their job right away. You know, I think people are happier when they feel valued and capable in their role, and providing really relevant and timely learning experiences is one way to help them feel valued and capable in their role. So it, you know, if the experience is engaging, if you're leveraging what they already know and do, people bring expertise to the training already in a lot of cases. So acknowledging that, recognizing that, but then building on that by providing new skills that are just super actionable and make their jobs easier really is going to help keep them engaged and help you as far as the organization achieve better results.
Well, I really like the idea of peer sharing and peer practicing, because I think that is super relevant for, you know, associations and trade groups that are bringing together kind of groups of colleagues from the same industry. And every person who participates in the training is going to bring with them, you know, all of their expertise from the industry. And you might as well leverage that and let them share that and make that part of the learning experience.
Absolutely. People like to talk about themselves and the work they do, right? So if they have expertise in a particular area, it's important to let them share that. Sharing is different in the virtual classroom than in the in-person classroom. Time seems to go a little bit quicker in the virtual classroom. So sharing and allowing people to share is a skill in and of itself in the virtual classroom, but it's still important. People have that skill set, they have expertise, and they want to provide value.
Well, and some of the platforms that people are using for training, you know, the big one being Zoom. I mean, you can have breakout rooms and such, and, you know, a specific time allotment for the peer sharing to happen. Or, of course, you can do it outside of the training itself, as you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. The chat box is another great way to get people to engage and share their expertise. Other people can see what's put in the chat box, so they can be recognized for the expertise that they're sharing, but it doesn't take up a ton of time in the main classroom, where the facilitator might get a little bit too far behind if someone were to come off of mute and start talking. It can be hard to get them back on track, right? So, using that chat box and providing calls for people to use the chat box is another great way to allow them to share their expertise.
As someone who has facilitated many strategic planning retreats and trainings, I can testify to the fact that sometimes it's really hard to rein people in.
Yeah.
That takes some skill.
Yeah. It does. And I think, in a virtual classroom, you potentially are losing some of the nonverbal cues that you have in the in-person classroom. And so, making sure that you maintain control of the classroom and are able to read the room as a facilitator is really important and looks different virtually. So that kind of is a segue into my next tip, which is around preparing for delivery.
Perfect.
I think, we as leaders and organizations want to create the environment and the opportunities for people to thrive. And delivery becomes just as important as design when it comes to creating those environments and opportunities. Your trainers, you may have trainers who are very, very skilled and used to the in-person classroom, and that is wonderful. It's great to have those people ready and available and willing to help. But virtual training is very different. So their facilitation skills may be very different. What they use may be very different in the virtual classroom. And it's likely that they're not as experienced in the virtual classroom just because it is more of a shift that we're seeing now. There were organizations that were doing virtual experiences before COVID hit, but we see a lot more shifting now than we did before. So, making sure that trainers are prepared, they've had a chance to practice in the virtual classroom is important from a technology perspective. You may decide that you want to have someone in the virtual classroom who's focused solely on technology, so the facilitator can focus solely on facilitation. That's a choice that an organization has. But either way, that facilitator needs to be comfortable in the technology. You need to as a facilitator, be able to seamlessly facilitate the conversation as well. And so having that opportunity to practice with the content virtually is going to be really important. I actually have a free resource on my website that is a great starting place for new virtual trainers. It just gives some really easy tips, tools for their tool belt, so to speak, for creating more engaging environments in a virtual space. It gives them tips on how to read the room when they do lose some of those nonverbal cues so that they can still read the room effectively. It gives them tips on asking the right questions. So I don't know if you've ever facilitated virtually or been a participant when a facilitator asked an open-ended question and was met with crickets. That happens. And so the thing is, you're trained as a facilitator, you're trained to do that in an in-person classroom because it starts conversation. But in a virtual classroom, you're often met with silence. And so asking the right questions at the right time is another important skill that virtual trainers need to have. And then also it just includes some tips on gaining more comfort in that virtual space as well. So it's called 3 Tips for Virtual Facilitation, and it's available on my website as well.
Okay, perfect. I will put the link to that below the podcast episode so folks can get it in the show notes.
Perfect. And then the last tip that I had was around evaluating the training. And we talked about this a little bit, right? You want both the formal and the informal feedback loops incorporated into your offering, especially when you're getting started. If it's a new offering, if the delivery method is new, for sure. If the content, if it's a new offering, you might want to include it there as well. So you could do this by offering a pilot, right? Nothing wrong with a little beta test to see how it works and get some feedback. You can do this through focus groups, like I mentioned before. So you're getting the participants together and getting feedback from them, getting the trainers together and getting feedback from them. You can do it through surveys as well if that's an easier method for you, especially if you have a lot of participants. It might be helpful to do it via survey. But you want to create those informal and formal feedback loops so that you can continue to enhance your offerings. We sort of know in the industry that training affects performance and that it can improve staff satisfaction and retention, which obviously morale is low in a lot of places right now, and it can improve your ability to innovate and meet customer needs, but that's only if it's effective. And so we want to make sure that we have these feedback loops in place so that we can continue to improve the experience and learn from it and provide really great training for people.
Heather, I always say that I want people to get, like, you know, at least a couple of nuggets out of every podcast episode. I think you gave them a whole plate full of nuggets today.
maybe it's my trading background.
Hey, that's true. That's very true. So, okay, well, we're going to put a link to your website so people can download that resource. Is there any place else that you would like people to connect with you? Or is that the best place to send them?
My website is great. I'm also super active on LinkedIn. If anyone wants to connect on LinkedIn, happy to expand my network in that way. I post content fairly regularly related to virtual training. So it's also a great place to kind of network and learn a few more tips.
Perfect. Thanks so much for being here today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Hey there, you made it all the way to the end. Bravo to you. I'm back in just one last time to remind you that there's a free one-page PDF available over at the website that shows you more than 20 ways that technology could be supporting your efforts to attract, engage, and retain more members. It's actually broken down into the stages of the member journey, so you'll know exactly where each piece fits. And everything that's on that one pager can actually be automatically done for you with software that costs less than $1,000 per year. So if you haven't already grabbed it, you can get your copy at joyofmembership.com/tech. joyofmembership.com/tech, TECH. Have a great week, and I'll see you next time.